Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We are live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is February 21st. It's about 7 o'clock p.m. So if you're not listening to it at that date and time, then it's probably a rebroadcast or a podcast. But since it is live radio, let me give out the phone number and you'll be able to call in and talk to us. Number here is 865-333-5937, 865-333-5937. Phone lines are open. And on the line, as we usually do, we have Wombat. Say hello, Wombat.
Hello, Wombat!
Hey!
I hope everyone had a great week. Let's go! I'm ready.
I did. Pretty good. Well, it's only halfway through, but so far, so good. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, or East Tennessee for that matter, well, you're not alone. There are several atheists. No. Several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll tell you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, besides this radio show, did you know that there was also an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
I actually did know it. I'm going to take back what I said from last week. Last week, okay. I said I wouldn't see it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have anything to do with it. I probably just downloaded it off the internet. Uh-huh. I went to see it, and I got to say, I was blown away.
Yeah.
What great villains. What great acting.
Villains.
I laughed. I cried.
Acting.
I had a great time, and I think it's one of the best Black Panther depictions on the screen.
No.
But
I think you,
great movie
one
altogether.
Of these days,
I recommend you go check it out.
One of these days, you'll actually find the show, but it's not a movie. It's a TV show. And it's been broadcasting, hard to believe, for about 7.5 years right here in Knox Patch, Tennessee. And we'll be telling you how you can watch that as well and maybe connect with them. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. So what are we going to talk about tonight, Wombat?
Guess what I'm doing right now. Wait, you don't have to guess. I'll happily tell you.
Okay.
I am holding a bunch of sockets and slowly, one by one, organizing them into my socket container. It's one of the manliest things I've been doing.
You've got a tool chest there in front of you, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm finally putting things away because I've been, for the last 3 weeks or so, doing some small modifications on my car. Not like anything extensive, just things like cleaning the engine bay, replacing the battery, changing out my serpentine belt, switching out my brake rotors, my brake pads, painting my calipers, putting in a cold engine air intake, just doing the, you know, the regular stuff that you would normally do.
Sure.
But I was having a lot of fun basically just learning how to do new stuff on my car, because I once had an accident 2 weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago.
Really?
When my car tire popped, and I didn't know how to replace it or how to fix it. And I went over to Tires Discounters. I barely tried to put on a spare donut myself.
Yeah.
Went over to Tires Discounters. Small plug for them. They treated me well. They took care of me. But I was in this position where I was really helpless and I didn't know what to do. So I said, you know what? I'm going to learn how to fix things on a car just to learn how to fix things on a car. So I went on Amazon. I got some discount parts. I got some tools. And I learned how to, you know, lift up my car and take off the wheel and start doing some things.
Yeah.
And it was just this really cool time where I'm outside, it's not raining, it's just one of these beautiful days that wasn't forecasted at all.
Yeah.
And I'm taking apart my calipers, and it's just like this weird thing because every screw is important, you know, like every part of this machine is so well designed, and every part of it just
works
fits
together.
Into each other at each. And each wire, every metal apparatus, every assembly has a part and plays an important role in the overall picture for how my car works. And I'm just looking back at, you know, the time that I was having with this build, and I'm thinking, man, this is some really good engineering. Because if there's anything I love more than maybe like junk food and great comic book movies, it's excellent engineering.
Right.
And I feel like when you look at a car, that's an obvious, when you look at really specific minutiae of a car and parts of how that thing's put together, it is very well put together and a good example of what I like to call intelligent design.
Right.
Just as few moving parts as possible, working as efficiently as possible to get you from A to B.
No waste, very little waste as well.
So I was having a conversation, not a lot of waste. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who I'll present because I have an interview scheduled with him later this week with Street Epistemology, which is like this thing that I do where I interview people about what they strongly believe.
Right.
He's a scientist who does not believe that evolution is a fact. In fact, we had a conversation today where he said, I don't believe we're apes. I don't believe we came from apes. And if you look at what Darwin says, he basically says that we all evolved from molten rock. And I asked him,
I didn't,
but this is a scientist, so I say there's different calibers of scientists.
Mm.
He can do his experimental work very well, but there's such a thing as cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
When you ask him matters of faith, it's a completely different part of his mind that's operating.
Mm.
And he seems to be aware of it. And he's a nice guy, and I can definitely talk to him about that, but that doesn't even go into it. But basically, one of his claims that we're not a product of evolution is because we're so intelligently designed. You look at us, and we're just this one complex, you know, instrument that was clearly designed that's probably way too complex to just come from rocks, and therefore every part of us is important and useful.
Right. That, and by so the way, that's we ought to tell the audience that that's a good example of a straw man argument too. I mean,
is it?
Yeah, he painted the atheist view as something that's easily deconstructed. Rather than, or Darwin's view for that matter, you know, if you tell everybody that Darwin had a silly view, then it's really easy to show it is silly. And he didn't represent Darwin's view at all correctly.
True.
Yes,
true.
And that's called straw man.
That's a great point. In fact, I asked them, typically when I'm presenting with a straw man like that, I try to ask them to repeat what they said. So I asked them again, like, so is your belief in a God supported on the understanding that evolution says that human beings came from molten rocks? And he quickly changed his, you know, point of view at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say it. So clearly there's some, and I don't
it's
think he
probably
got to that
something
point
that they commonly say in the circles that he frequents. So he kind of like let it slip.
Right,
yeah, let it slip out when it wasn't in that circle.
And when you heard it from another person, just again, I give a moment of pause to maybe reflect on it.
Mm-hmm.
He might still not be convinced that evolution is true, but he may not use that argument in front of me again. And
right.
He did it, and he hasn't said.
Yeah, that's good.
But let's dissect that a little bit. What do we mean by intelligent design? Have you ever heard that phrase before?
Yes.
I think it's a very good favorite from a lot of people. What do you think it means?
Well, what do I think it means
what do you think it means? You're part of the show too.
Well,
you
know, from a religious viewpoint, it means that that life is just too complex to have come about by evolution or any other natural process. It had to be put into place by a intelligent designer, and in this case, they mean God. Now, you know, your car is intelligently designed, and we can prove that because we can point to car designs. We can talk to manufacturers. We can go out and interview engineers who worked up the different components. You know, all of them would be intelligent. And even if it was designed partially by computer, which they are nowadays, we can also point to computers and say those are, they have a level of intelligence. And that goes into the design. But we know people, we know computers, we have evidence for all of that. We have no evidence that a God exists or any kind of supernatural being at all exists. So to point to one and say that's our designer begs the question. They infer the existence of the being in order to complete their inference.
I agree with you completely. I also have a slightly different way of thinking about intelligent design.
Sure.
Typically, I don't question so much by the intelligence, but really the nature of design and how do people recognize things that are designed. And typically the way that we recognize something that's been designed is by comparing it to something that has not been designed. Uh-huh. So if I were to say, hey, this Mona Lisa is clearly something that was constructed by a thinking, intelligent creator. I'm doing that by comparing it to, like, something that I know has not been created by an intelligent, thinking creator, like maybe a rock or a stream of water or a garbage pile that's just been dumped on the floor. You know, there's some people who would call that modern art, but we could definitely say that there's different calibers of ability and thought process that was put into a work by comparing it to something that hasn't had any thought or talent put into it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And by comparing these two things, we can make the distinction that something's been designed and something hasn't been designed. The issue, the issue that people who say that God created the universe and everything in it is that they can't recognize something that's been designed because effectively everything's been designed through their model.
Right.
There's a common example that someone will bring up with the watchmaker argument.
Uh-huh.
You'll see people, like, I was walking down the beach, mm-hmm. and I picked up a watch, mm-hmm. and it looks so much different, and it's clearly of evidence of a being that created that. There's all these mechanical parts.
That's
way more complex.
That's William Paley's. That's William Paley's argument from 1802, the watchmaker argument.
Oh, okay. I feel like I feel special. But you know what? If this was actually the God model that you're using, you're on a beach full of watches where everything's a watch, and the tide is nothing but watches,
mm-hmm.
because literally everything has been designed made by a created being.
According to their beliefs.
We're only able to recognize that the watch was different because we're contrasting it with something that was clearly not designed.
Right.
So by intelligent design, we're really just saying that we're making an observation that this thing is different from all other things based on whether it was designed or not. And by intelligent design, we can look at a car and say, hey, this is a lot different than a rock or a big slab of granite.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a body, a human body, could we point to examples of nature that are pretty similar to a human body, or start looking at parts of a human body and say, well, this clearly wasn't designed, or this was designed. And I think that's going to be the more interesting part.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is
you hear anything?
You have some natural processes that produce a design-like effect, like ice crystals when they form. It looks designed, but actually it's just chemistry and temperature working together to make a pretty design. You can't just say that something looks designed, therefore it is designed. And even in the case of evolution, evolution, theoretically, over thousands of years, brought life from non-life. Well, I can't say evolution, but it brought new species about through the process of speciation using natural selection. Natural selection would be a design component. Mutation would be a design component, but there's no intelligence involved. There's no goal in mind, anyone's mind, in this process. It just happens. And it's not an accident, as people like to say, because accidents imply purpose, and there's no purpose.
Right. And also, if you're going to claim that something was designed by a designer, it does put the burden of proof on a person to you know, explain the nature of a designer and demonstrate that one actually exists.
And theirs.
Back to what you were saying earlier.
And it's theirs.
Right. I could definitely say, you know, I don't have any proof of what a human being looks like without design or with design. Mm-hmm. I just have these human beings, and I have to come to a conclusion on whether or not it's been designed or not. But if there is going to be an intelligent agent to design it, it would be nice to have some demonstrable evidence that supported the existence of that designer. Without that, I'm left with only the compelling notion of, well, it seems like these things could come about through natural processes that we can better understand through things like evolution, natural selection, and speciation over time, a long period of time. And that seems to have a more compelling case of evidence behind it than someone claiming that there's an spiritual designer that's just invisible and you can't see him, but you can if you come to our church and pay us 10% of your paycheck.
Yeah, and that the Creator God is always their God. They never seem to want to bridge that gap. They can point to all these things like argument from design and argument for first cause and all these generic God arguments. But when you say, okay, let's just for the sake of argument say that the universe had to have been created by an intelligent designer. Now, make the case that that designer is your God of your religion and not the God of some other religion. I mean, there are 10,000 different religions out there at minimum, and all of them are saying that their God is the one who created the universe. But they always just jump over that big old gap there without trying to even address it.
And, you know, there are people out there who will say, well, you know, in fact, the guy who I was speaking with, who claimed that, you know, Darwinism basically says that people came from molten rocks. His claim was that basically every religion in the world right now is all pointing towards a deity that we're basically seeing through different colored or blurry or scratched up lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all generally pointing at the same thing. But for the most part, there can be a circumstance where one of the religions is right. There could be a circumstance where a collection of the religions are right, but they can't all be right because there are many different religious beliefs, some which include a God, some that don't. There are atheistic spiritual beliefs out there, or at least, you know, claims that are not theistic in nature but are still religious in nature.
Religions that have no gods. They're just philosophical religions. Yeah.
Absolutely. And not only that, but there are people who, you know, will use their spiritual feelings or their heart to come to the conclusion that there is no God just as fervently as there's people who would use their, you know, their feelings and inner voice to tell them that there is a God.
Right.
And because of that, you have this very desperate contrast in points of views where people say there is a God and there is no God, and only one of them can be right. Literally only one of them can be right. Only one of those people are right, the people who say there is a God and there isn't a God. The thing on the atheist perspective is we don't know who's correct, and we don't want to be persuaded towards one group until we have evidence that convinces us one way or the other.
And if they had evidence, they wouldn't make us try to use faith. I mean, if they had, when they say you've got to use faith, it's a tacit admission that they don't have good evidence or even good arguments.
Right.
You know, because that's just throwing it all out the window and just saying believe anyway. And one point I'd like to make is even if, let's say that we gave it up and said, okay, the deists have it right. A God created the universe. The deists, let's say that they even created a religion around that God. That has absolutely nothing to do with whether the fact that souls are real or an afterlife or any place to go, you know, once you die. Or that even if souls did exist, do they exist forever? Do they contain our minds and our intelligence? Just one thing after another that they just gloss over and don't even try to address at all.
But not only that, but there are a lot of people who have different reasons that compel them to their religious beliefs.
Right.
And if largely they come from a perspective of not understanding what science is or miscoloring what science is saying to get to their conclusion that God is a real and true thing for them, it's not only obviously wrong, but it also damages their perception of science as a reliable model to explain things.
Right.
And when people start to, as a culture, close their mind away from science because it's telling them something that's counterintuitive to a belief that's been instilled in them from youth all the way into their adulthood, and they don't really have the critical facilities to, like, break that down, it damages not just them, but, like, the people they talk to, the people they raise, the society as a whole, education, laws.
Right.
I mean, there's a really severe trickle-down effect with regards to people not being able to openly, rationally deduce how the universe works around them, and instead relying on a
fables.
Limited text or dogmatic principles.
Right.
Basically, yeah, fables to get through life. It's kind of sad in the heart and disheartening, especially in my workforce, in the workplace where I'm working at, to meet people who are sincerely anti-science, yet have the job description of a scientist. It's just baffling sometimes.
Yeah. And by the way, and we might want to introduce your credentials at this point. You have a PhD in what? Chemical biology?
Biochemistry.
There you go.
Yeah, biochemistry. So, yeah. So I am very, very well versed with life processes. I was a Christian when I was in undergrad. And some of the big reasons why I changed my position, from one, because I didn't understand the morality as dictated to me through the Bible. Like, I actually had to go through an ethics course and, like, understand, oh man, my understanding of morality isn't just a list of rules that are given to me in a book,
right.
But it's actually a system that we can use to determine right things from wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I learned that, I tried to go back to the Bible and honestly just read the book with my new understanding of morality, and I was found that I was absolutely disgusted with some of the things that I was encountering.
Right.
But even beyond that, when I went to my first year in grad school, I started learning things with an open mindset with regard to how the body is how our bodies came to be on a cellular level, and how our genes work and how our proteins work. And suddenly I was getting all the answers, or how better to say it, I was getting explanations for things rather than just answers for things. And they fit in perfectly with a consistent worldview that was built on rational, demonstrable, testable data. And everything that I was hearing that I didn't like, I could always re-reference it. I could go in the lab and test it again. And it was consistent and it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that I learned that were just like, oh my gosh, I need to tell people about
this. Well, how much better did it make you feel about your beliefs in the world and you being in the world and understanding it? I mean, I've had people on the internet ask me all the time, so if I become an atheist, what's the benefit? Well, you live in reality. How's that? You don't have anybody reading your every thought. You know, an eternal judge ready to throw you into hell for every minute. I mean, the natural world is a beautiful world, I'll put it that way. And
it's
really nice to be able to understand it. You don't have to keep saying it's all a mystery.
Right. It's sort of like getting color television for the first time, you know?
Right.
And you're like, oh my gosh. And there is a appreciation for black and white, and there's nothing wrong with black and white. But once you go color it's very hard to look at a black and white screen of like an outside park or something and not see the green in the tree not see like the blue in the sky.
Well, let's make another analogy, because I'm really into these Enchroma videos. Have you heard of Enchroma glasses?
Yeah. Yes.
If you're colorblind, say if you're red green colorblind, or was it blue green colorblind? There's several different kinds, but you can buy glasses now that will help correct your color vision. And they've been out for about 5 years now. They're kind of expensive, anywhere from like $300 to $500, but they work, and it's amazing. And it's like you were saying, it's like being colorblind, having the glasses, put them on, learning to live with them, then taking them off. You can't go back. I mean, I guess some people would find it a little more calming not to have all those colors, because it's a very colorful place out there. And
so I got one more analogy for you. You know, I know sign language, right? Like you see me use sign language?
Uh-huh.
Okay. My mom's best. We got her cochlear implant. They're kind of expensive, but my sister and I both worked hard to get both of her ears fitted out with them. She doesn't keep them on, which is kind of annoying, but that's a different story for another time. Anyway, when she got her ears turned back on for the first time, and she could barely hear us before, but when they were back on, we were all crying, like, basically, because it took a while for her to, like, register the sounds again, but, like, for her to be like, oh, this is a car. Oh, my gosh, I forgot what a car sounded like. Of course, it's the car we're driving.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, this is the wind. I'm hearing something. I don't know what this is. What is that? It's like, it's birds outside, Mom. And it was like making us get up. I'm almost cracking up right now. But it was such a cool thing. And it was one of those things where you knew, like, this is an amazing moment of our lives. And she, just listening to all the music that she lived in and just being like, Mom, listen to this. Mom, listen to this. Mom, like, listen to this guy tell jokes. Look at his timing. You see this?
Yeah.
Listen to this song. No. It was just such a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like these are moments that we really can't go back from again. The reason why she turns them off sometimes is because she's in a really crowded area.
Yeah.
It's a little bit overwhelming for her.
Mm-hmm.
True. And she's not used to that yet, but she's definitely keeping them more on. And it's definitely not something that she would want to give up. I feel like when you become an atheist or when you realize that religion is not an explanation that you need, but just an answer that you're giving, it's very hard to go back to the Kool-Aid. It's
right.
very hard to go back to
it
the
is.
Script. It's no longer fulfilling to you. And the things that you can find with a rational mindset is way better as far as resolving like this thirst or this hunger that you need for trying to figure out how this world works and realizing not only just how small you are in the universe, but how amazing you are to be where you are right now in this amazing situation. It's mind-baffling why people would not want to understand it. But it is a curve. You do have to go through a curve.
Right.
Anyway, we're going to talk about something really cool in the next half, right? I have a list of useless human body parts that we don't need. Hey, let me tell you something. I put together my car, and I have a couple of screws left over.
Oh, no.
No, but I'm able to get to work fine. But as soon as I figure out what those screws are, I'm going to put them back in.
Yeah, definitely.
But let me tell you.
Recommend it. Have pieces falling off.
Right, but there are definitely pieces of my body that I could lose and not have any problem with whatsoever.
No, no, that we end up paying people to take them out.
What is that? That's true. That's absolutely true. I want to go through all of them. How much more time do we have before the ball drops?
Oh, we can go ahead and take a break now and then come back here in a minute.
All right, let's do it.
All right. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, WOZO Radio 103.9 FM, live right here in Knoxville. Today is Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. And for the break, we're going to we were talking about living in a world of reason versus magic. So I'm going to play the Symphony of Science, Age of Reason, and we'll be back in about five.
When you are studying any matter or considering any philosophy, ask yourself only what are the facts and what is the truth that the facts bear out.
Science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe.
If we are not able to ask skeptical questions,
to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs.
In all of science, we're looking for a balance between data and theory. You don't have to delude yourself with irony and fairy tales.
The same spiritual fulfillment that people find in religion can be found in science by coming to know, if you will, the mind of God.
The real world, as it actually is not evil. It's remarkable. And the way to understand the physical world is to use science.
There is a new wave of reason sweeping across America, Britain, Europe, Australia, South America, the Middle East and Africa. There is a new wave of reason where superstition had a firm hold. Teach a man to reason. Think for a lifetime. Think for a lifetime.
Cosmology brings us face to face with the deepest mysteries, with questions that were once treated only in religion and myth.
The desire to be connected with the cosmos reflects a profound reality. We are connected, not in the trivial ways that astrology promises, but in the deepest ways.
I can't believe the that's a way of thinking. A way of skeptically interrogating.
There's a new wave of reason sweeping across America, Britain, Europe, Australia, South America, the Middle East and Africa. There's a new wave of reason where superstition had a firm hold.
Teach a man no reason.
Think for a lifetime.
Think for a lifetime.
By what you wish to believe, but look only and solely at what are the facts.
Enjoy the facts at the thought of the story, but make sure that there's a clear sharp line drawn on the floor. To do otherwise is to embrace man.
There's a new wave of reason sweeping across America, Britain, Europe, Australia, South America, the Middle East and Africa. There is a new wave of reason where superstition had a firm hold.
Teach a man no reason.
Think for a lifetime.
Think for a lifetime.
Listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
And welcome back. This is Daughter 5, and we have Wombat on the line. Hello, Wombat.
The Wombat!
Hey. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Okay, let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002 by yours truly. We're in our 15th year. ASK now has over 800 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can
that number keeps going up.
It does, it does. And we are a meetup group, so you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist and find us there. It's just that simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps in Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays on the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. Matter of fact, I've changed that room recently. But anyway, go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events for details about how to find them. There's also a Sunday Assembly is what it's called, which started in England a few years ago and now has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They meet only once a month, though, on the fourth Sunday, down at the International Building down near the fairgrounds. Then, since school is in session, you might want to check out the Secular Student Alliance if you happen to be a student. They have programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school and college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. And earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about Knoxville's Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Yes, that's 6:30 to 7:30 on Wednesday, so it pretty much overlaps our radio show, which is some reason I cannot be on that show anymore. I'm always here doing my show. or you can watch it streaming online. It's Free Thought Forum, and you can see it on ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or this radio show, just come to an ASK meeting or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. Okay, back to the topics again. We're talking about intelligent design, I believe, and how the body, human body, is not really that well intelligently designed, more haphazard.
Yeah. And I was working on my car and found no useless parts, and I thought that's pretty good intelligent design. Yeah, but we look at our own bodies, our own human bodies, and there's a lot of not necessarily useful things on there.
Yeah, like cool what? That's quite a statement.
Let's talk about one we were just talking about over the break. You call them goosebumps. Mm-hmm. The technical term for them is erector pili muscles. Those are muscles that are just underneath our hair follicles,
uh-huh.
and they make our hair stand on end. Typically, either when we're excited or if we're really cold. This probably happened to all of us, especially any listeners that are listening in right now. But again, they're just tiny muscles attached to our hair follicles. They give us goosebumps and they make our hair stand up.
Okay.
And we don't really need them.
We're having a phone call come in. Hold on a second. Hello, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. You're on the air. Do we have a name or a nickname?
Hi, it's Heather.
Hey, Heather, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Doing pretty good. What's on your mind? You were in here just the other night.
I was in there just the other night, actually. I was just listening to you all because you're talking about the body, and of course that big health inequalities and health, so.
Okay, cool. And what did you have to say about it?
I want you all to finish your thought first.
Okay. We were talking about the muscles that raise the hairs on your arms and neck, and why they might have been useful at one time. Weren't they useful there, Wombat, at one time?
So one of the prevailing ideas is that by the hairs, by the muscles flexing, you're tightening the skin, and by tightening the skin, you're reducing the propensity of pores, or you're basically tightening up all your pores, basically,
mm-hmm.
which makes your skin a little bit tougher and a little bit more resistant to like water or like cold air coming into those pores and cooling down your body even more than normal.
Right. Also, we used to have a lot of hair. And if you have a lot of hair all over your body and you make your hair stand up, it helps trap the heat in more. You get more of an air blanket around your body trapped underneath the hair.
Not only that, but if you ever see a cat that's scared when it flexes and all of the hair stand on end, it's the same thing. It's that same reflex. And sometimes people get those goosebumps when they're at a horror movie and they like see something that freaks them out. They start breaking out.
Yeah, but it doesn't really help us much anymore. That's body part we can do without.
Help us, but we can do without all those muscles. Let's get rid of them.
Yeah. So what would you want to say about that, Heather?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the, when it comes to women, and I'm being kind of binary here, but one of the reasons that we tend to grow our hair out so long is because it's a warmth factor for us. So if you're not used to not having hair, you know, even though we've adapted a little bit more in terms of hair on our bodies, and so because we don't tend to have it on the back of our neck or around our shoulders, we rely on longer hair. But I mean, it's one of the reasons we grow it out. And so there is adaptions around the female body that happen as a result of those kinds of things.
Hmm.
Well, and we adapted ourselves, so.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just something that comes up in our healthcare discussions.
Something you have control over.
I'll stop at that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the next thing on your list there, Wombat?
So I want to talk about something that's been plaguing me for ages, literally ages. It's been the cornerstone of mystery and inquiry and suspense for as long as humanity has existed, and that is male nipples.
Yeah, that's true. They don't do us much good.
Why do we have them?
Yeah.
They have no use whatsoever.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, it adapted for the same reason that female bodies did, right? It just,
Well, you have uses for it.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah.
I feel like women have more use for them than men. I look in the mirror and I see them and I'm like, why do you exist?
Yeah.
Where are you here? Mm-hmm. Like the screws in the car, I could do without them completely. But we seem to have them.
Yeah.
Some are more attached to them than others. Totally fine.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Uh-oh. I'll let Heather handle it.
biologically speaking, technically speaking, men can technically do pretty much what women can do in that. And when it comes to that, those appendages. In extreme circumstances. So, although it may not have been so extreme way back in the day, but technically speaking, if all else fails, that there are instances where that can happen. In terms of like breastfeeding for right. children.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I know that sounds extreme.
No, I've heard it.
Extreme,
I've heard of that. If let's say
I didn't
nature.
Really call it straight away. Because yeah. She doesn't know what she's talking about, but
if
the purpose was very similar.
If society had gone through a catastrophe and most of the women were wiped out, nature would find a way to use a male
yes.
body
right.
in to
I
help
think,
out in
yes.
the
over
reproduction.
Time, it would adapt accordingly.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
All right, I'm gonna throw something out here.
Mm-hmm.
Just throwing something out. If there was a sudden cataclysmic event that had occurred that wiped out most females, and changed men, and many other remaining survivors in such a way that the only thing that we could survive on
mm-hmm.
was male breast milk, we would all be doomed in a fortnight. There's nothing that can help us.
You
guys are optimistic.
It wouldn't happen.
Nothing that can be done.
If it happened in a fortnight, we would be doomed anyway.
Yeah, basically.
Next.
There are plenty of examples of that in nature where, mm-hmm. That hermaphrodite and adaptation has
mm-hmm.
happened.
Yeah, and
thankfully that hasn't necessarily, I shouldn't say thankfully, some people wish it had happened to humans, but.
Yeah, and to quote that guy from Jurassic Park, life will find a way.
Yes, life will find a way. Yeah.
Oh, you guys got the optimism. I love the positivity. That's great. Again. You aren't buying male breast milk in the store.
Well, I just want to call in and say hello to you guys
Okay.
Back you a little bit and let you get back to your show.
I appreciate it, and I understand you're going to be a DJ for too long. Hopefully.
I hope so.
Nice.
I do hope so. I'll find out in the next few weeks.
Sounds real good.
I did do the training with Matt, so George and I owe a big thank you to Matt, I've been lucky to come along and see and talk with you guys, and Dawn as well. She knows she's Crew Chick Dawn, so and a couple other folks. So
well, we look forward to it.
I'll try to make a habit out of bugging you all on Wednesday nights.
Okay, sounds good.
If I'm not in school.
Sure. Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
All right, it's good to talk to you all, I'm sure I'll see you in a few weeks.
All righty, take care.
Okay,
good talking
care.
To you.
Right.
Bye. Bye. Okay, I have to mute that microphone now. Okay.
If we want to get nerdy on nipples for a quick sec, men typically have male nipples because we start the same way as females in early fetal development.
Yeah.
With
nature
the same
tries to make
parts.
A female, as it were, and
basically,
and mutates it.
It can go, more or less. Like we start as either one, and for the most part, like as we develop, if we become male. We have the same parts, so the body just does what it can with the parts and says, okay, nipples, sure, you're invited to the party, and mm-hmm. it develops with those body parts.
Right.
But there's like this protein called prolactin, which is largely stimulated by, XX chromosome bearing people or females, and not so much in men. So as a result, females, because they produce prolactin, can stimulate lactation out of those nipples, and that leads to the myriad of functionality of nipples on females. But because men don't have that protein that able to be synthesized on a regular basis, we can't lactate as nearly as strong as females. I'm sure there's some crazy guy on YouTube who can do it.
Yeah.
But that's the dark hole that you don't
do
want to go into.
Do not Google that.
Anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of an appendix?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, by the way, another thing that you might want to put on your list that we could talk about is not, you were going to mention coccyx before, but the a tail, period, a tail, not a tailbone, but a tail. Some children are born, some babies are born with tails.
Number five, I'm sad that you dodged the appendix.
No, put it on your list. We'll come back to it.
At the end of the book. At the end of the book. I heard about it at the end of the book. But no, you went straight into the tailbone. I'm like, okay, cool. We can go into the tailbone. Yeah. But yeah, we have an appendix. We get them taken out sometimes if they're inflamed or if they're critically inflamed. We don't need them.
Well, it's a body part that tries to kill us.
One of many. Yeah. But let's get into the tailbone because that's a really interesting thing. So we all have skeletons inside our body. Isn't that crazy?
Right.
And at the bottom of our vertebrae, we typically have 3 to 5 extra bones at the tip of our spine that protrude out from the bottom of our pelvis. These things are actually a tail. It's like a tiny little tail.
A tailbone.
Sometimes,
it's called
most
coccyx.
Of the time, it's inside. True, it's called the coccyx or your tailbone. You'll know it when you break it.
Right. Yeah.
But not only that, but there are some people who actually have their tails sticking out of their bodies.
Right.
So, like the
fleshy tail.
Plastic barrier.
Yeah.
It actually
grows.
And if
you don't believe it, Google that.
Not at work. But there are people who have actual tails and they're walking around. They don't need them, but they definitely have them.
Right.
And it's kind of a weird thing. Kind of a weird thing. I'm looking at a really creepy picture on the internet right now.
Uh-oh.
But it's basically a picture of a person's foot without any toes. And there's 2 dates here. One is 2017, a person with all their toes, and then one that has 2523, or the year 2523, and I'm just looking at a bunch of nubs at the end of a person's foot.
We don't need toes anymore?
I think what they're trying to say, I don't know. It's kind of freaking me out. I don't think it's going to happen in 500 years.
No.
But we definitely have toes that we don't need, and there are definitely not as much use for toes as there have been, unless if you're like a professional athlete or a person who like uses, you know, the grip stuff, or like one of those people who can play the guitar with your, you know, all those toe fingers.
Uh-huh.
For the most part, we don't use our toes. They're just there to help support our balance to an extent, but we can be just as fine without them, particularly the pinky bone or the pinky toe. The pinky toe keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It's weaker of all the toes that we got. And functionally, it doesn't necessarily need to be there. It doesn't really support our weight to any extent.
Right.
And it's just there to hang it out for the most part until we need to trim the nail.
But besides keeping our balance, there's very little I do. I agree. Yep.
Sure. We have a small dent that comes between, so this is a little bit more of a nitpicking thing, but if you look in the mirror, you'll find like this little pink thing at the corner of
your
eye.
Right in the corner, yeah.
Right. This is actually a vestigial organ. And by vestigial organ, I mean that it's something that we can demonstrate used to be a far more significant organ in former versions of the human race, or really in earlier higher apes. It was actually a third eyelid that could actually wrap across the entire eye. A good example of this, if you ever see a reptile or a cat or some birds, they'll have they'll have this eyelid that goes up in between their outside eyelid that has the fur on it and their eyeball that's underneath. That will just help to wick away a lot of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have this, and there are some people who have somewhat functioning ones, and that's a scary video on YouTube if you want to check that out. But our eyelid right now is basically just next to the tear duct. And if you look at it close up, you actually see a flap of flesh that's just standing right there or sitting right next to our tear duct. Doesn't really serve any function.
A lot of people think it is the tear duct, but it's not.
No, it's 2 different things.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of parts. What about you? What do you think?
We can get away from humans for a minute and talk about like whales.
Okay.
Whales have hip bones that have actually, they've atrophied so much they've actually detached themselves from the spine. And look up whale hip bones, and they'll go into a lot of detail. But one of the funniest things, one of the things that I realized over time, I probably saw it on a video. But if you ever look at an animal in the water and say, is that a mammal, like a dolphin or a, you know, a whale or something like that, is that a mammal or is that a fish? You know, you can't, some of them you can't really tell. Like, is a shark a mammal or a fish? Well, it's a fish. And one of the easiest ways to tell the difference is how they wiggle through the water. Now, a fish will go side to side. Yeah, a fish will go side to side because that's the way that evolution has brought them to a maneuver in the water. But mammals came on shore first. They came on shore and then eventually went back to the water. Like, and you'll notice that there, when they move through the water, it's more of a galloping movement.
Or it's up and down.
It's up and down, like they used to use on land. But now that they're in the water, they still use that same movement. They still have the same spine arrangement and all that.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But when you see,
that's
like,
really
whales or porpoises or, what do they call them, dugongs, or the ones that used to be mistaken for mermaids. I can't remember. They get hit by
manatees.
Manatees. You'll notice that they all move in that up and down versus the side to side motion. And that's a product of evolution.
So maybe just to clarify a little bit, like, when you have a fish, its spine movement tends to travel horizontally as it traverses the water.
Uh-huh.
And that provides most of its locomotion as it's going through the water.
Right.
This horizontal swaying or whipping back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But because mammals went on land and then eventually went back.
Returned.
There's enough common ancestors that returned back to the sea. They tend to have the same swimming pattern, which is an up and down fashion, compared to fish, which have that side to side fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So mammals locomote themselves through water laterally compared to fish, which do it horizontally.
That's really interesting. The other way around.
Wait. Did I say that wrong?
Yeah, fish go side to side. Side to side is lateral.
Horizontally?
No, that's laterally.
What's latitude and lateral? Why do they sound the similar?
Well,
that's
think
so
of two
annoying.
Lines side by side. They're lateral.
Okay. Ooh, I hate English.
Have you ever heard of bilateral talks?
I have, yeah.
That's two-sided talks.
Cool. So,
hey, stick with us. We'll learn your stuff.
Up to down. Yeah, nice. Side to side, up to down. Mm-hmm. I thought I'm going to stick with them,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
That's cool. There's also a lot of Olympic swimmers who developed swimming techniques that they got from animals.
Uh-huh.
There's actually a lot of cool design that's just through natural selection and evolutionary processes has exhibited traits that are very functional for high-level athletes and high-tier engineering feats. For example, there are trains that are like shaped like bird's beaks in order to like minimize the amount of air that goes around them and actually makes them way more quieter as a result. But back to swimmers, there's an actual swim that's very, very similar to like a dolphin that whips its tail back and forth or up and down through the water. And even Michael Phelps is one of like the prominent users of this kind of swim.
Mm-hmm.
When he jumps into the water, he doesn't come back up again immediately to breathe in air. He stays underneath the water and whips his body as a whip up and down, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how you had mentioned.
Yeah.
To get through the water a lot faster before he even takes his first breath.
Yeah.
Sometimes he can get halfway through a lap before he even comes up.
That's so cool.
Very cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not bad mammals.
No.
Pretty cool.
You did good in mammals.
I got one that I want to go through real quick, and I think we kind of touched on it already, but we had talked about the muscles underneath our skin that makes our hair rise up, but there's also body hair, just body hair in general. Some people have way more of it than others, but it's not necessarily a necessary thing for us to have when we live in a world that has clothes or sweat glands or all these other means that we have to keep it insulate heat or keep us cool.
Plus, it's harder to keep it clean, and you get infections and infestations and things that go with a lot of hair.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not talking about like the hair on top of our heads.
Oh, I know. I'm talking about furry people. I know. My brother was a pretty furry person. I have hardly any hair on my arms, but he had quite a bit for most of us, for both of us. But yeah, some people have a lot more hair, some people don't, and it's going away over time. There's less and less in general in the population.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
compared to
that.
Where it was like 10,000 years ago after the Ice Age,
Sure, I can say that. I can definitely say that. You know, it's never something that I really considered, but there are definitely races of people who are way less hairier than others. Like, I've never seen a hairy sumo wrestler, for example. Maybe they have some way of manicuring that.
Yeah.
But I have seen a bunch of people, at least at the college that I went to, like, from people like from Hungary, not calling people out, but I'm just saying, I've had roommates. And you'll step in that shower and hear something that no one has ever said. All this body hair I'll attach to my shower wall is absolutely necessary. I'll be glad to collect it and give it back to the person who shed it all over the place. No one's ever said that.
Nope.
And there's a good reason for it, because it's not necessary. Sometimes
right.
It's really disgusting.
Yeah.
You were telling me about a giraffe earlier. What was all that about?
Well, you looked it up. You probably have the information there in front of you. But if giraffes were designed by an intelligent designer, their laryngeal nerve would probably just go from where the brain to the larynx, which would be just, you know, a short trip. Now, for a giraffe, it would be, you know, from the brain to his larynx, which is a longer trip. But the way
is the larynx, by the way?
Larynx is your voice box, so it would be the
right.
The sound.
It's right at the base of my mouth,
right.
Basically, right?
Right.
So you're saying that we would expect the nerve to go directly from the brain, which is at his head, just mm-hmm. down to his jaw.
Yeah, I'm going
maybe
from
a couple of inches.
Right, I'm going from memory here, but the way I understand it was because evolution changed his body shape over such an extended period of time and very, very slowly. As his neck got longer and longer, the nerve just grew, you know, farther and farther to get to it. Because if I remember correctly, it had to go around a bone at the base of his neck. Well, that's not a big
right.
problem for a small animal or an animal
right.
that's compact, in design. But when you get to a giraffe, if you dissect one, you'll see that the laryngeal nerve goes from, like, their brain all the way down to the base of their neck and then back up to their larynx. Why the heck would a designer make it that way? And now it makes perfect sense if that animal evolved over a long period of time. But why? What a waste if you're a designer, and why would you put it that way?
So exactly as you said, you have that nerve. Mm-hmm. It goes from your brain to the base of your neck, basically, mm-hmm. so it can get in contact with an aorta near your heart,
right.
and then goes all the way to your voice box at the base of your jaw, basically, or like
yeah.
back of your throat. And if you had a neck that was like a couple of inches, maybe about a foot, maybe at most,
mm-hmm.
that's not a problem at all, because that's an easy trip. You know, we're talking about a nerve that maybe would be about a foot in length at best. But if you're a giraffe, it goes from your brain all the way down your neck to the base of the giraffe's shoulder, and then all the way back up to its mouth. It's a ridiculously long nerve.
Right.
And ludicrous if that was something that was intelligently designed, because if all it was trying to do was get through its larynx,
right.
that's an easy trip.
Yeah.
And it's easy to connect a nerve to a blood system. But
right.
And that
combined with all the other things we've talked about, and a lot of things we haven't talked about, just goes to show that life on Earth was not created out of nothing. And it's funny that
you're not intelligently designed.
Right. True. But it's one thing that struck me as funny is that your friend that says that science says that humans were created from, what, molten rock? When his own religion
yeah.
says that man was made out of mud or dust. And he didn't say anything about that.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We've got a couple minutes left. Do you have any final words before we sign out for the week?
Yeah, just one quick one. Complicated things are not a sign of intelligently designed
right,
things.
Right.
Simplicity is the hallmark of design. If I told you mm-hmm. I had a light bulb that can screw in one step versus 1,000 steps,
mm-hmm.
the one-step light bulb is the better design light bulb. Simplicity
yeah.
is a hallmark of design. Just because something's really complicated doesn't mean it was designed intelligently.
Right, right. So true. And as usual, this is Dr. Five saying that don't worry about going to hell. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell until they prove that hells are real and souls are real and gods are real. Then you don't have anything to worry about. Just hang loose, have a good life, and remember this is the best or the only life that you're ever going to get. Don't waste it on hopes of a next one. That's it for me. This is Dotter 5 signing out. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye, Wombat.
And we'll see you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock on WOZO Radio 103.9 FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. See you later.
See ya.